Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, the Calgary Flames have clinched number one in the Pacific Division, and we are 79 games into the season, which means only three games left. As always, I'm Dan alongside Matt. And Matt, let's look at the last four games for the Flames.
Yeah, it's been a interesting week where like the writing's been on the wall that the Flames are going to be first in the Pacific Division now for probably about 2-3 weeks, and finally, the letter goes by our name, and now we can look forward to home ice for the first two rounds of the playoffs.
The Calgary Flames had sort of a week of good and bad teams. They started the week off by on April 18th, which was last Monday, playing the Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago. Goudreau scored twice in this one, which means that he passes 600 NHL career points. Calgary got goals from Dubé, Goudreau, Coleman, Goudreau again, and Shillington for a 5-2 win over the Blackhawks. What were your thoughts on this one, Matt?
Well, frankly, I didn't think the Flames had perhaps their best effort overall, and were very much managing the game. But, you know, Calgary is significantly better than the Blackhawks, and just put them away and did what they had to do.
I thought the Flames looked good in the first period. I thought they let Chicago back into the game in the second. And I think just because Chicago's not a great team, they only managed to score one. And then I think the Flames came back in the third. I still didn't think they looked great in the third, but it's like they knew they needed to close it out.
Yeah, doing enough. And, you know, like when you're a team like Calgary, who is an elite team, you know, you can not have your best effort and still come out with a 5-2 win. And, you know, Calgary didn't need to put the pedal to the metal to get the result. And, you know, especially with how condensed the schedule is to close out the season, you know, you have to conserve energy when and where possible.
The next night, the Flames were in Nashville, and this is the only game of this week they didn't walk away with 2 points on. The Calgary Flames instead get 1 point in a shootout loss to the Nashville Predators, which could be a potential playoff matchup. They haven't played the Predators since November 2nd, so two teams that weren't very familiar with each other. I thought this was a real tight checking game, maybe not the most interesting game for a lot of Flames fans to watch, but I thought this looked like playoff hockey. What about you, Matt?
Actually, to tell you the truth, I thought that the Flames pulled their punches in this one.
How so?
There were plenty of times where the Flames, I felt like if they had given the extra effort, could have generated additional scoring chances, but kind of, like, I saw Gaudreau on one play where he could have beat the defender because he had position on him, but instead he peeled off and passed it back to the blue line, and the puck got passed around, and, you know, it ended up being a nothing play. And it's one of those where, like, if the team was going full out, you know, I think Gaudreau might have went, and, you know, it just seemed that, like, the whole team was kind of playing well enough not to give Nashville any confidence that they can beat Calgary, but also, you know, because of the fact that, like, we played the Dallas Stars a couple years ago, and Dallas is full of guys that are Flames killers. You know, it might be better that the Flames play Nashville, and it just seemed like that kind of a feel where, you know, they didn't give it their 100%, I don't think, in this game. So,
do you think that maybe part of being an elite team is knowing, you know, the old saying, knowing when to hold them and knowing when to fold them, but knowing when you've got to go out and play your, let's say, 100% and when you can get away with playing your 90%?
Well, you look at, like, this team, how it's built, you know, you have a lot of very physical banger type players. And frankly, in this game, we didn't see the Flames really engaging a ton physically. Like, they would finish their checks, but it was more like a normal game against, like, Arizona or something like that. Whereas, like, the next game against Dallas, the Flames were throwing the body around like it was a playoff game. And I just, I that was one of the storylines that jumped out to me, was just the seemingly the lack of effort in the first game of the two against our potential playoff opponent, and then, like, going all out on Dallas.
Well, let's talk about that Dallas game. The Flames back in the Saddle Dome to play the Dallas Stars. And in this one, big note is Matthew Tkachuk got his 40th goal of the season, his 100th point of the season as well. So two Flames players now with 100 points as Calgary gets a 4-2 win over Dallas. This one was so weird. We saw 5-on-5, 4-on-4, and 3-on-3 hockey in one period. I can't remember the last time we saw 3-on-3 in regulation.
Usually that's like after a brawl has happened and, you know, like they've got like 20 penalties on each side and okay, yeah, well.
But even then, I mean, when was the last time we saw a big, you know, line brawl like that?
Mm-hmm. Just weird, anyhow. I think the last time I saw 3-on-3 was like Pittsburgh versus the Islanders. When they had that huge brawl a number of years ago. But yeah, it's a little weird to have 3-on-3 not in overtime.
Anything else you want to chat about this Dallas game? We'll compare the two teams, Dallas and Nashville, in a little bit, but anything specifically about this game? I thought this was a fun game to watch for Flames fans, and I think we got a little bit of everything from the Flames. We saw some scoring, we saw some hitting. I thought we saw a really good defensive game from both teams.
Yeah.
I felt like this was one of the more well-rounded games we've seen in probably the last couple months.
Yeah, and like this is like basically like when I saw that like this is how it was going to break down this week. This was the kind of a game I was expecting against both opponents. And so like when the Flames went all, you know, like it's a Tuesday against Nashville and then, you know, ramped it up against Dallas, it struck me as being curious. And, you know, Calgary handled Dallas. Like if it wasn't for Ottinger, the Flames probably win this game 7 or 8-2. It's just, you know, credit to Ottinger for, you know, making a ton of good saves and robbing Lindholm a couple of times. Dallas didn't seem to be very good. But that being said, you know, like they still have a lot of players that are good against Calgary historically. So, you know, it's one of those, it's be careful what you wish for if you're cheering, hoping to get Dallas, but also similarly, you know, worry about Nashville too, because both teams can beat Calgary in a 7-game series. It's just less likely.
And then the last game of the season, almost the last game of the season, Hockey Night in Canada last night, the Calgary Flames took on the Vancouver Canucks in the Saddle Dome. Started off slow. We had no goals in the first period, and then Calgary ended up winning 6-3. This, to me, looked like what it was. A team in Calgary that wasn't really playing for anything, and a team in Vancouver that looked very desperate. And the desperation didn't come out and give Vancouver the win. Calgary gets 6-3 win in this one, and Lindholm finally gets number 40 of the year. He's been trying and trying and trying for a while now, and it finally went in.
Yeah, it's one of those games that, like, you could see that Calgary was being patient with Vancouver in the first period, and that, like, Calgary wasn't really pushing that hard against Vancouver because Vancouver was desperate, and then Calgary just simply capitalized on every mistake that they could, that Vancouver gave them, and it was just one after another.
And I think it says something about the Flames that in a game where they, I mean, you could tell they weren't trying hard, they got 6 goals. And I don't know if that's mostly the Flames, if that's, you know, poor goaltending from Demko, if it's a bit of both, but this did not look like the Flames' best effort, nor did it need to be.
No, and frankly, Demko looked good for most of the game. Some of the goals that he gave up, like, you know, like when it hits Richie's skate and bounces in, or Zadorov hitting Myers in the leg and it bouncing in, like those ones, it either hits you or it goes in. And like, I'll never blame a goaltender on an in-close deflection like that, because, you know, that's just bad luck. He got beat by an excellent backhand by Dylan Dubé, which, you know, like that was a very much a highlight reel goal. And if the first two in the second period were both very good shots. So, you know, it's one of those where, yeah, he gave up five goals in the game, but you can't really fault him too much for anything he did. The whole team in front of him was bad, though.
They were, and I think that's why Vancouver is where they are in the standings. I mean, this was a game that looked like a top team versus a non-playoff team.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just a nice skate, basically, in order to get ready for game one.
With that, the Calgary Flames have now played 79 games. They have 49 wins, 20 losses, and 10 overtime losses for a total of 108 points. Right above them is Colorado at 116, who we cannot catch at this point. Minnesota 107, St. Louis 107 right behind us. And then Edmonton way down at 98.
Yeah, and a note with the 49 wins, that is most ever by a Daryl Sutter coached team, and 108 points is also the most by a Daryl Sutter coached team.
There you go, interesting stat.
Yep, so he's having a good year.
He is.
I think you can already box the Jack Adams for him.
You and I have talked about this before, right? Jack Adams is supposed to be the coach judge most influential their team's success, and there's a lot of coaches in this league, they're coaching great teams. I think the team would have been successful even without that specific coach there. But I think it's hard to say there's, you know, Daryl Sutter hasn't turned this team around. And I don't think we would say that if Peters was still the coach or, you know, Ward was still the coach. Like, Daryl Sutter has been a big influence to this team's success.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Maybe they should rename it the Daryl Sutter Trophy.
Yeah, like, frankly, if this team had, like, you know, insert generic coach here instead of Daryl, I think the Flames might have been borderline on the verge of missing the playoffs again.
So, Matt, we've seen...
Daryl did a good job.
We've seen now in this week two possible playoff opponents, Nashville, Dallas. What are you changing your mind after last week at all about who you'd like the Flames to play after getting another look at both those teams?
I'm more confident that we can beat either. I was a little concerned just because, I haven't seen either of those teams in a little while.
And you don't have to beat them every night. You just got to beat them 4 of 7 times.
Yeah, and, like, how would you say, Nashville would probably be the slightly tougher opponent, but the Flames also are better than them significantly at every position. So, other than goaltending, which is about a toss-up. So it's kind of one of those, I would, you know, if the Flames end up playing Nashville, which seems likely at this point, you know, that's perfectly fine. If they end up playing Dallas, they just have to, you know, pay more attention in the last minute of games and not, you know, give up last second goals repeatedly, and they're good. And
after what we've seen, to me, if the Flames end up playing Dallas, they're going to have to play more disciplined hockey. They're going to have to make sure to stay out of the penalty box, to not maybe give in when Dallas tries to push and shove, which is why we saw some 3-on-3 hockey there. And if they can do those things, I think they can beat Dallas. I think Nashville's going to wear the team down more. They're faster. They're quicker. It's going to be harder to score. Right now, I would rather play Dallas.
Yeah, to me, it's like... one of those where, you know, Nashville has certain strengths and certain weaknesses. Dallas has certain strengths and certain weaknesses, and they're not the same things. So, you know, it's kind of like pick your poison. Like, each one of them can beat you in a different way. Like, on the overall, Dallas is less good. But, you know, it's not that they're bad either. And... like, Dallas could easily beat the Flames in a series, you know, if the Flames aren't playing their game, and just like Nashville could. So, to me, it's less important on, like, who in terms of, like, cheering for, like, getting either A or B. It's more focusing on your own detail work. And, you know, making sure that, like, as you said, not taking dumb penalties, playing a physical game, whether you're playing Nashville or Dallas.
And the physical game is going to be more important against Dallas.
Yeah, and walking that line more effectively. And, you know, it's one of those, like, if this is going to be a series where if Calgary loses the series, it will be because Calgary beat itself, because there really is no reason why the Flames should lose to either opponent. And because the Flames are better up front, they're better on defense, and at least with Saros, it's a match on goaltending, and Markstrom is better than Ottinger. So, you know, it's one of those, Calgary should win probably in 5 or 6 games, either series. But, you know, if Calgary gets in their own way, you know, and we've seen that story, like the last time we played Dallas in the playoffs, like we should have won 5 of the 6 games and yet lost the series.
Yeah, and maybe it's the, I don't know, the fan of me wanting us to avenge our series against Dallas from last time. But I just feel like I would rather see the Flames play Dallas for a multitude of reasons. And I think that's probably one of them, is going back to the bubble season and just saying, okay, we need to show that we can do this.
Yeah, and like, I understand that point of view. It's also, like, if that happens, great. But, like, it to me, it's like, don't tempt fate either. Because, you know, like, they have beaten us before. And, you know, it could easily be one of those situations where we get in our own head. And, you know, like, oh, they were good at coming back in the last minute. And, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy time. So, you know, that's the only thing I'm at all concerned about. But realistically, like, if, you know, like, this was 2 Eastern Conference teams we were talking about, I think both of us would be saying Flames in 5, Flames in 6, you know, just based off of talent level, regardless of which team it ends up being a matchup against.
Yeah, I know where you're going with what you're saying, and I think you're right. The team can beat both. I don't know. The way I think that the Dallas series will be easier on the Flames if we're looking at them to go for a long run.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and, like, how would you say, frankly, like, if the Flames get through the first round, I think the second round will be easy for Calgary. Just because both LA and Edmonton, so LA, is not very good. And, you know, like, the Kings, like, they will be able to beat Edmonton, because, you know, like, every team should be able to beat Edmonton. But, you know, like, that second round series is not going to be anywhere, like, both of those teams are significantly worse than Dallas or Nashville. So, like, if Calgary can get through the first one, like, you know, you're basically getting a free ticket to the conference finals at that point. And, you know, it's one of those where, do you want a decent test early just to get your legs under you, or, you know, be just, you know, cruising on through? And, you know, there's valid arguments for both. It's just, yeah. Calgary does really have the easiest lineup to get to the conference finals of any team in the playoffs. So, you know, they just have to do it.
We saw the Calgary Flames make a very interesting roster move before the Vancouver game. They sat Jacob Markstrom out. He was in the press box and called up Dustin Wolf, who was on the bench with Dan Vladar getting the start. Matt, I know you've been pushing all year for some of the top players in Stockton to get a start up here. Guys like Peltier, guys like Wolf. We won't discuss some of the other guys who aren't here, but with Wolf now in Calgary, do you expect to see him get a start in any of the next 3 games?
Yes. I think that he will start the Winnipeg game. I think that Markstrom's probably going to get shut down for the whole week upcoming. I don't really see any need for him to, you know, possibly get hurt in, you know, for any reason. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, Vladar for the first 2, and then throw Wolf in there for the last one, just to allow him to get a taste of the NHL.
And now that the Stockton Heat have clinched their division as well, they can probably have Adam Werner hold down the net for a little bit.
Well, they only have 2 games left in their schedule, and then they have the first round bye. So, like, they're good until...
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the bye, yeah.
Yeah, so like they're good until like May 7th or May 8th anyway. So like that's where you might see a couple more Flames get recalled this upcoming week to get a game or two in at the end, just because of the fact that, you know, like I'm assuming like if, say, Gaudreau gets a goal against Nashville or Minnesota, I think he'll get shut down at that point. And, you know, like that whole first line, I think, gets shut down in the Winnipeg game. And, you know, let her rip, basically, with any prospects.
So that's an interesting idea of sort of shutting down the first line and, you know, bringing some guys up there. And while I don't disagree, and we've had the discussion, we won't have the discussion again about where those guys might fit in if we bring them up. I think that there's some guys that the Flames need to get going who are already here. And if you look at the top six, or let's say the top nine, you don't need to change anything on the first line. Would you agree? Johnny, Lindholm, yeah. Tkachuk is the best probably first line that they can make here.
Well, you know, like if Gaudreau does get that goal, the Flames will have 340 goal scorers for only the second time in the last, like since 95-96. So like that first line, that's beyond sold. Like that it's etched in stone the rest of the way. Like unless you're trying to just get some extra offense from, you know, and shake things up. But
when we look at the next six forwards in the depth chart, the way that they're currently being deployed, line two is Andrew Mangiapane on the left, Michael Backlund on the right, Michael Backlund is center and Tyler Toffoli on the right. The third line is Dubé on the left, Kali Yarncroke at center, and Blake Coleman on the right. And Matt, I mean, those are good lines, but we're not, I think, seeing the production from those lines that we need to. Do you think that those six guys are in the right configuration for the playoffs?
If you had asked me, like, say, after the Chicago game, I probably would have given you a different answer. But I'm starting to see some chemistry between Toffoli and Mangiapane. And, like, they're starting to find each other with passes. And I think that was one of the problems that they struggled with, was finding each other properly. Third line, Dubé is on fire, frankly. Like, he's been really good for a while now, and I think him having two exceptionally responsible defensive forwards with him allows him to be a little bit more risky than he normally would be offensively, and he's jumping in more because of those two. So, and again, both of those guys are easily able to pass with whomever. Like, it really doesn't matter. So those lines seem to me to be working out their problems. And like over the last couple of games, like in the Dallas game and especially in the Vancouver game, I thought both those lines were looking more cohesive and more dangerous as the games went on. And, you know, it would be interesting to see, like, over the next week if, like, those guys can keep on a roll and carry forward. Because if they can, then, you know, the problem kind of sorts itself out.
And I think if we shut down that first line or even reduce the minutes on that first line, let's say, I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity to give these, both of these lines, or let's say all six of these players, more time to play and more time to work things out and that sort of thing. But right now, I guess my big question is Michael Backlund the right guy to, is he the right guy to center what needs to be a scoring line? And I don't know that he is. I mean, we've seen in the past that Backlund is a great two-way player, but I don't know he's the center I'd put there. And I agree with you about the Mangiapane Toffoli thing. I would keep those guys there. I don't think Yarncroke has turned into a second line center yet, but I wonder if it's worth trying either Dubé or Coleman centering that second line. I mean, I'd kind of like to see Mangiapane Coleman at center or Toffoli at center, one of the two, and then, but essentially Mangiapane Coleman Toffoli is your second line. Then putting Dubé, Backlund, and Yarncroke on your third line, I think you've got two real good scoring lines then, and one, let's call it a checking line or a two-way line.
Well, the thing is that one of the benefits of Backlund and Yarncroc being the two centers on those lines is they are excellent defensive centers. Both of them, like, that is their bread and butter of their game. The any offense from them is, like, added bonus time. And with that, and especially in the playoffs, you know, like, when you have four guys that can score 20-plus goals, like Dubé, Mangiapane, Toffoli, and Coleman can, and have the potential to do so, having that really good defensive center allows those guys a little bit more space to do risky stuff. Where, like, in the postseason especially, you know, having Backlund and Yarncroc being more back and aware will help to mitigate any odd man rushes the other way and just limit scoring chances against. And, like, while, you know, like, in a perfect world, Backlund would be, like, 50-point Backlund instead of 30-point Backlund. But, you know, it's one of those things.
I think those days are behind him, Matt. I think that he's starting to be on the backslide of his career.
Yeah, but how would you say? He's still a good enough facilitator offensively. Like, you know, he can still, like, make that good pass to eat bread out front, or you know, pounce on that rebound just as good as he always did. It's just, it's a matter of, you know, like, especially with the playoffs where, like, each goal is, like, a pivotal event in the game. The more that you can prevent, and especially under a Daryl Sutter system, the more that you can prevent, the better off you are. And, you know, it's one of those where, like, real world, like, if, like, Monahan wasn't hurt and was, like, more himself, you'd probably see Monahan on that line.
Which line?
The Backlund line.
Okay.
And, you know, like, Backlund on the Coleman line and Yarncroc, possibly where Dubé is, or on the fourth line. But, you know, it worked out that way that Monahan's not there. And, you know, both those guys are adequate enough offensively. And, like, while he hasn't been great as a Flame, like, Yarncroc is a very opportunistic kind of forward and has been throughout his career. And we've seen how many chances he's had, and just none of them have gone in for him yet. So, you know, it could very well be that if you're needing more offense, you switch Backlund and Yarncroc and just leave everything as is. But
see, and I don't think that Yarncroc is the guy to switch. Like, I think Backlund is the second line center of the two.
And, well, the thing is that Yarncroc does have a history of being a decent second line player, too.
But he hasn't shown it in Calgary yet, I don't think.
No, and that's the rub. And, you know, I think that, like, Yarncroc looks like a player that, like, if he scores one, I think, like, he'll score a bunch afterwards because he's getting a lot of good chances. It's just, like, the goalie's robbing him left, right, and center. And, you know, it's been unfortunate. Like, he's getting point-blank slap shots that normally he scores on, and the goalie makes the ridiculous glove save on it. And it's like, well, that's great.
You know, and the more I'm looking at these six, I'm almost wondering if making the change I was mentioning would be robbing Peter to pay Paul. I mean, you know, we've got Mangiapane, we got Toffoli, both guys who can be very offensive drivers on that line. And then on the third line, if you were to take Coleman and move him up to the second leg as suggested, and then have Yarncroke and Backlund, Dubé's not really going to have an offensive partner on that line. And like you said, Dubé's starting to come alive, and I think a lot of that's because Coleman is as well. So yeah. I think, yeah, in some ways you want three real lines you can count on in the playoffs, and then you've got to keep Dubé with either Coleman or Toffoli. So
yeah
that doesn't really do you a lot of good.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, like, all three of those lines, the first line and those two, are very good at both ends of the ice, and that's due in large part to the defensive presence of guys like Backlund, Toffoli, Yarncroc, and Coleman. And so, you know, it's one of those where, like, if you can limit the other team from doing anything, or as little of anything as possible, the better off that you stand a chance of getting the win at the end of the night. And, you know, spreading the offense and defense throughout the lineup, I think, is a very good idea just for the whole slog of getting through a postseason series and then multiple if we're lucky. You know, so it'll be interesting to see. And the one good thing is that because of the fact that we have so many offensive weapons, like, if you need to, you can concentrate those guys all on one line, you know, and, you know, just roll, like, three lines and, you know, go from there. It's just, it'll be interesting to see. Like, there are plenty of options.
Yeah, the more I look at it, the more I think that the current configuration of Mangiapane, Backlund, Toffoli as line two, and Dubé, Yarncroke, Coleman line three is probably the best bet. Like, you're not getting really a real firepower second line, but I think it does do the best job of spreading offense throughout the lineup.
Yeah, it's sort of like having two B lines instead of like a second and a third line, like a slightly lesser second line, like in terms of higher end scoring ability, but, you know, like right there still, like a above average second line, and then but having two of them, so, you know, it makes rolling the lines a lot easier too.
Well, and there's going to be someone in the playoffs who gets hurt. I mean, we're not going to go through this playoff race with as good of, you know, health as we've had for this team, so I think keeping them in this format and then being able to move one of those third line guys up if needed, I think it, you know, it gives you that flexibility of leaving them this way that you can still get a good enough line if a change needs to be made.
Well, and the thing is that the flexibility that that third line has, like, Dubé can play either wing and center. Yarncroke can play either wing and center. Coleman can play wing and center.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you have an injury anywhere, you can slot the appropriate guy in.
Well, and even if you have to bring, say, Lewis up to that third line, it would be good enough for a couple games. If it was, say, Dubé, Coleman, and Lewis, you could probably get away with that.
Yeah. Or even Ruzicka if need be. Like,
yeah. You
know, depending on...
Yeah, actually, that's true. Ruzicka's still here, so you'd probably put him in there first.
Yeah. It's sort of like, say, like, Mangiapane got hurt. Like, you could easily just slot Dubé up into his spot and be more or less okay. Like, it wouldn't be, you know, like, obviously you're missing a good player, but, you know, for type player, you know, you've got a pretty much an equivalent type of guy replacing him. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, especially moving forward with the postseason and how, you know, like, the Flames, back the last time the Flames went on a run with Darryl as the head coach, like, it was literally... Okay, who dropped now, and how do we, you know, get through this guy being out? And it's one of those where Sutter's going to have to work his magic, especially if we do go on a long run, on making sure that everything is as effective as possible in each game, in each series.
And I think that if we can give those two lines more time going forward, more time, you know, in the last few weeks of the season here, more time as maybe we start to shut down some of the top players, that might help get them going as well, of just giving them more time to play together.
Yeah, and I think, like, that's why you might see, like, maybe in the Minnesota game, maybe not, but probably in the Winnipeg game, like, that first line just not playing at all. And especially, like, if Gaudreau scores number 40 against Nashville, I think they get shut down for both. And then, those two lines, the second and third line, become your 1-2, and the kids become the third line, and, you know, go from there.
You were mentioning the last time the Flames made it to the playoffs with Darryl Sutter, and we all remember that series. I guess the surprise X factor was probably Marty Zielina, the Eliminator, who was not one of our top players, but really became an important key for the Flames. I know we talked about who that guy might be at the beginning of the season, and after next week, we'll recap our preseason predictions. But Matt, based on where we are now with 79 games played, who do you think right now, which of the depth forwards, and by depth forwards we'll say not the top three, do you think could be the big X factor, the guy who could make the biggest difference for the Flames this offseason?
Well, when he was,
or I guess this postseason,
on a different team, the player that ever since we acquired him has jumped to mind as being that difference maker from a kind of a surprise source is Kalle Järnkrok. And when he was with Nashville, he was basically the straw that stirred the drink as they made that improbable run to the Stanley Cup Finals that one year. And he was very clutch with a lot of timely goals, timely assists. And he wasn't one of their top guys, but he was just that guy that happened to always be Johnny on the spot right when they needed him to get that good shot off. And he does have a good wrist shot and a good slap shot. If you know, if he gets open in front of the net, like more often than not, he's going to score. And granted, he hasn't played well here yet, but those chances are there still. And he just,
and we have to, let's be honest. I mean, he hasn't played well, but he was also really sick for a while too. Like, things have been stacked against him.
Yeah. And he's been rather effective at both ends of the ice. And I think that he will be perhaps one of the more impactful players on this team. And I would not be surprised if he ended up getting like 7 or 8 goals if the Flames go on a bit of a protracted run where it's like, oh, wow, how valuable this guy was as a trade deadline acquisition and, you know, that, like that kind of thing. Because he's always been very good defensively. But that one run that he had with Nashville, like, he really separated himself as being sort of like that year that Edmonton had Fernando Pisani just go off for no reason randomly. He was just one of those guys where it's like, oh, he scored again. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. And, like, I'm looking forward to seeing how he fits in, and especially playing with a couple of skill players, whether he's on the second or third line, he will get those opportunities.
I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to go with his line mate, Blake Coleman.
Yeah.
Coleman's a guy who's made it to the Cup Finals. He knows what it takes. I think Coleman's played a lot of hockey, and maybe that's why he's looking kind of tired this year, but I think Coleman knows what it takes. And playing on the third line where he's not, you know, he can rest a little bit. I think that we might, I guess by rest, I mean he's not playing, you know, 20 minutes a night so he can be more ready. I think Coleman could be a surprise there, and I think the playoffs are where he could earn his $4.9 million. I think if we all look at it right now, did he earn his $4.9 million this year? Maybe not. I think the playoffs could be where we go, wow, that was a great value for this guy.
Yeah, and looking it up, by the way, Järnkrok only did have 7 points in that playoff run, but they always seem to be very important ones.
They could still be a key 7 points.
Yeah. Coleman was pretty much my second thought on that as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if that whole third line ended up being like the shining star of the Flames in the postseason, especially because of the fact that they're going to be playing whomever's third defense pairing and primarily, and you know, you're going to be playing against inferior players and other teams don't have that kind of depth. And like that line could be really classified as like a second line as well. And so we'll have the advantage when they're out there.
And, you know, I think that Coleman has not maybe got some of the credit that he should this year for what he's done. If you take a look at where he's at, he's at 33 points. His career high is 36 when he was with New Jersey. Like, 33 points for a third line guy is quite impressive.
Oh, for sure. Like, that's borderline second line numbers in the modern NHL. And, you know, for a third liner, like, that's actually quite impressive. And, that's why, like, I wouldn't be surprised if the whole third line ended up being, like, the storyline for the Flames in the postseason.
Yeah. And I can see also Coleman being the guy on that line. If I'm Sutter, because we know Sutter likes his veteran experience, if I need to move guys around, or if I need to put somebody onto a second line or, you know, things like that, I think Coleman's the guy that I'd probably give the nod to. Kalle Järnkrok, as we've talked about, hasn't really shown he can do that yet. Dubé, I think Sutter's still a little bit unsure of, but I think if, you know, you need someone to move up, it could be Coleman, and that's where you could see him really excel, is if somebody goes down and we need someone to fill a higher spot. I think Blake will get the nod for that.
I agree. Well, how would you say a lot of the guys that are on this team, especially the veteran guys, are very much Daryl Sutter type players who give their all?
Well, and I think when we recap this season next week, that's, I think, one of the storylines to look at, is that this team, for the first time, was built for the coach's identity.
Mm-hmm. And it's not really surprising that the results are following when you have a bunch of Daryl Sutter type guys with Daryl Sutter as your coach.
Mind you, I couldn't even tell you what a Glenn Gulletson type guy or Jeff Ward type guy or Bill Peters type guy was.
No. And that's also why, you know, like for years I've been ranting about getting Daryl or any like high end coach. My first choice, of course, was Daryl, but you know, somebody who has a clear identity. And like, you can even see like how Bruce Boudreau has done a wondrous job for Vancouver, because his offensive style of coaching worked with the Vancouver Canucks players. And you know, the Flames really, with all of the miscellaneous coaches they had, none of them had an identity that you could clearly define as, you know, X. And it's hard to build a team without basically a leader, frankly. And, you know, having a leader behind the bench is the difference. And that's why they get paid the big bucks, the good ones.
True that. Well, Matt, we've got some fan questions to end off the week. Anything else you want to talk about, or should we jump to these fan questions?
Just very much looking forward to seeing how the team finishes out and who can get what milestones. You know, because like, I'm secretly hoping that Eat Bread gets a hat trick in one of these games and gets two more to have 40 goal scorers, just because that would be just awesome.
I know you like to call them that. We do have some fans that are new Flames fans. So when Matt says Eat Bread, he's referring to Andrew Mangiapane. Yeah.
Sorry, that's the Italian in me. You know, it. Yeah.
Not everyone knows all the nicknames, so I just want to let people know who you're talking about. Yeah, and we talked about that last week. You know, this is really now a point in the season where we're at individual milestones, right? There's not much for this team to play for. The team's not going to beat Colorado at this point in terms of points. Edmonton's so far down, it doesn't really matter. I guess there's pride because there's two teams behind us that could overtake us for Western Conference standings. It really doesn't matter all that much. But, yeah, it's about individual milestones.
Yeah, it's like, will we get home ice advantage in the conference finals if, you know, X team gets there instead of Colorado? You know, and, like, that's basically the only real thing that matters at all. And, like, does it matter at all? Not really. But it does, but it doesn't. You know, like, realistically, the difference between, say, starting a series off in Minnesota or St. Louis and or here, it's like, yeah, it's going to be a dogfight either way. So it doesn't really, to me, it doesn't really make that huge a difference. But, you know, we'll see.
So, Matt, we got two questions this week left on our Twitter from @WrongEndPodcast. When I looked up who they are, their name is Wrong End of the Stick. I thought maybe they were holding their hockey stick upside down. But, no, this is a cricket podcast, a sport I'm not too familiar with. So, from one sports podcast to another, they got two questions for us. The first one, what makes the season a success? Is winning a round or making the conference finals enough? What do you think?
Well, frankly, it depends on, like, what your expectations are.
Well, they're asking us. I know. So based on your expectations.
Say, Calgary was a rebuilding team and had a season like this, like, it would have been a success just to be here as it was. Like, yes, the Flames missed the playoffs last year, but, like, we've been continually good for a while now. And, you know, so, like, a season like this is more like a returning to where the Flames should be. So the regular season success, to me, isn't as big a deal. The Flames, though, like, basically since 14-15, have not won a round. And, like the play-in, yeah, they did, but that it's still not technically the playoffs. So, you know, it's one of those things that, like, if the Flames, say, lose in the first round again, well, it's like, okay, yeah, you had a great regular season, and that's all you guys are, is a good regular season team, and maybe you should look at changing the roster to fix that. Because, like, clearly something's getting in the way of you actually taking that next step. So, like, it to me, it's very important for this team, if they want to consider themselves having a successful season, is not only, like, reaching the conference finals, because I'm kind of viewing the second round as kind of a bye, just because both those teams are terrible.
But yet those two teams are playoff teams. I don't think we can underestimate that you might think they're terrible, but they've beaten half the league to be where they are.
True, but they're also terrible, and, like, the Flames should beat them. And I would be literally saying that of all the other 14 playoff teams, all 14 of those teams should be able to beat either Edmonton or LA in a series. So, you know, it's...
So your answer is that they have to make it to the conference finals, or they have to make it to the Stanley Cup finals?
Not only making it to the conference finals, but being respectable at a minimum. And, like, say, like, if they face up against Colorado, not getting smoked in five games like they were a couple years ago. Like, if that happens, then it's like, well, good, you're the best team in a really bad division, and you're cannon fodder still. And, you know, like, they need to show that, like, they're an actual team, you know, to be reckoned with. Not, you give a good effort when you want, and that's it. So, it's one of those where... I think that, like, they need to at least hit game 6 or 7 of the conference finals if they're on the losing end of that to be successful.
I think, you know, this question asks, is winning around enough? The Flames have given up so much this year and mortgaged so much future for now. And I think if we were to win only one round and then come back and say, wow, we gave up all these draft picks and all this capital and we won a round, I don't think we could really say that was good asset management. I think the Calgary Flames have to win. They have to win two rounds. They've got to make it to the third round, at least to the Western Conference Finals. I think you and I have a bit of a different thought there. I mean, yeah, they could lose in five, but I think just by making it there, you're respectable because you've already beaten two other teams. So I think that as long as they can make it to the third round, I mean, it's not very often you see a team go from not playoffs to the finals. And I think as Flames fans, we're excited by that possibility. But realistically, it's probably not going to happen. So I think that if we can make it to the third round, I think that gives us a lot to build on for next year. And I think that would be success for me at this point.
Yeah. That I think anything below said, that. Like, frankly, my expectations for this team is to... Like, if it's Colorado they end up facing, it'll be a 6 or 7 game series in the conference finals. And if it's the other two, we beat them.
Sure. But I think, you know, and it's just semantics. We won't sit here and argue semantics. I just think that for me, when we're talking about, you know, they need to be respectable. To me, any team that makes it to the Final Four is respectable. Whether they're out in 5 games, 6 games, 7 games, to make it that far, I think you've got to respect that team. Mm-hmm. So that's my thought on that one. The second question from the Wrong End of the Stick podcast, how much are Johnny and Maddie going to make next year? Why don't you start this one off, Matt?
I think Gaudreau's probably going to get around 11.5 to 12 per on an eight-year deal, and probably front loaded, as much as is feasible under the CBA.
But the salary cap hit would be about 11 or 12,
yeah, 11 and a half, 12. I'm saying roughly, and
okay. And what about Kachuk?
Around 10.
Interesting.
Yeah. 10, okay. 10 and a half. I'm gonna, and again, a long-term contract. I don't think that, like, I think, like, if the Flames go short on Kachuk, it'll be like a 1-year deal, type of thing. Just to, you know, kick the can down a bit. So, because he should still be an RFA after next season. So, you know, kick the can down one more year and then go for the 8-year after that.
I think that Goudreau is probably going to get 7 or 8 years at $10 million, and I think that really makes him a Flame for the rest of his career. I don't know that he'll go much higher than that just because they need some money for other things, but I think $10 million feels about right for Goudreau. Tkachuk is an interesting one to me. I mean, they're both at 100 points. So theoretically, they should be worth the same. Tkachuk, I think I could see a scenario where the Flames can convince Tkachuk to take the... Because he's an RFA, so I can see them convince him to take the qualifying offer, which I believe is $9.5 million. I'm just double checking here, for 1 year. And I could see there being a scenario where they say, take the 1 year. You know, we will have some more money after that, and we can renegotiate with you at that point. But take the 1 year and, you know, let's kind of get through it, if you will. I can see that being a possibility. I think Tkachuk is probably going to be in about the $9 million range if Goudreau's at $10 million, which is still what I think is going to happen. But I'm also not convinced, and we don't have to. We won't go into this week, but we can talk about it as we get close to the offseason. I'm still not convinced he's going to be a Flame. I feel like Tkachuk is going to go to the highest bidder.
Yeah, I think with his brother being the captain of Ottawa, I think that, you know, him wanting to be the captain of his own team, I think, is a driving force for Matty. So, I think the...
But I guess the question is that team Calgary?
And I would say yes. Especially because he's very much a Darryl-type player. And, like, him having a breakout year like this is not a surprise to me. With playing under Darryl, like, it's a match made in heaven, like, you know.
Well, let's have that discussion as we get close to the offseason.
Yeah,
man.
But
I'm thinking $10 million for Goudreau. I think that Tkachuk will get $9-$9.5 million, and I think that is going to be, I mean, last time we negotiated with him, he didn't sign until like the eve of training camp, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And I think that could be the case here again. The nice thing with Tkachuk, we don't have to re-sign him right away. He's an RFA. As long as we qualify him. I mean, if some team's crazy enough to give us 5 firsts for him, which I think would be the compensation, great, you can have him. But I think you could get the rest of the roster figured out first and then come back to Tkachuk because you've still got his rights.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I'm kind of somewhat concerned about Shillington and Mangiapane's money more so than I am Goudreau and Tkachuk's. I think both those other guys are going to get like 4 or 5 year deals as well. But
well, let's come back to the rest of those guys in the offseason when we got to start thinking about getting them re-signed. Yeah,
that's where, like, that to me is more of where the hang up will be, because pretty much like the Goudreau and Tkachuk contracts, the Flames can easily find that money. You know, like, just putting Monahan on the IR solves like well over half of the problem. So, yeah.
Again, we'll talk about that in the... I personally wouldn't say easy, but again, we'll talk about that as we get closer to the offseason once the postseason's over. Mm-hmm. But with that, let's look ahead at the last 3 games of the season. It's weird to be here in the last week of April, looking at the last week of the season. Usually round one would be done by now.
Yeah, but, you know, we're still in bizarro land. Yeah, thanks to COVID,
The Flames have played their last home game. That was the Vancouver game, Fan Appreciation Night at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. And now they have a 3-game road trip coming up. The 26th on Tuesday is in Nashville once again. They've been there 2 Tuesdays in a row. Then they have a day off, and then they're in Minnesota. And then they jump back over the border for their final game in Winnipeg. Those are all 6 p.m. starts this week, so a little bit earlier than we're used to. Matt, neither of us did well last week. I predicted a win against Nashville and Dallas, a loss against Chicago, Vancouver. You thought all 4. You were closer. You were off by 1 point.
Damn infernal shootout. Coin toss.
Not quite where we need to be.
Yeah.
What are you thinking for this week?
Loss, win, loss.
So you're thinking win to loss to Nashville?
Yeah.
And then a win to Minnesota and a loss to Winnipeg? Yeah. Why do you think they're going to lose to Winnipeg?
I think they're going to be mailing that one in. just, you know, like, I'm expecting, like, the kids to be playing, Wolf to be in net, and just, the, you know, like, the effort level's gonna be zero for the Flames. And, you know, like, in past years, like, the Flames have blown that last game when it really doesn't matter. Or the opponent, like, there was one year that, like, I think the Flames beat Vancouver 7-1. It, like, that was our final game. It, like, we weren't going to the playoffs that year, and Vancouver was. So, you know, it's just one of those, I think, that they're just not going to care. So it's just, yeah.
And at the same time, it didn't look like they cared against Vancouver and still managed to get six goals in the net. So yeah. I'm gonna be a little bit different than you. I'm going to go the opposite direction. I think they're going to win against Nashville. I think Daryl's going to make sure that they get they're ready for that Nashville game, especially with a couple days break. And I think they're going to lose to Minnesota, but I think there's going to be an impetus to end off strong against Winnipeg. And again, with a not-so-great team, I think they will find a way to win that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think that we see Jacob Markstrom in net again during the regular season?
I would bet against it.
Daryl said that he wanted Jacob to get 4 or 5 day breaks. So if we look at that, he played on the 21st, a 5 day break would be the Nashville game. But I think if I was the Flames at this point, I could see maybe putting him in against Nashville.
Minnesota would be the only realistic game this week that makes sense to me.
See, I'd say Nashville just because it's the playoff preview.
It depends on, like, what you're wanting. You know, like, are you wanting to play Nashville in the first round? Like, it, you know, if your effort level is there and, like, you're wanting to beat Nashville so that way you don't play them, then, you know, it makes sense to go all out and try to win that game and go hard. But Daryl seems to be the type that does not want to supply any, you know, locker room, you know, fodder. And, like, especially, like, if we were to go all out and still lose that game, that might be demoralizing a bit. And so, you know, if we go in a little on the casual, like, who cares side, I think that might help if we end up facing them in the first round.
Knowing Daryl Sutter, I think we'll see Markstrom in one game, but if I was the coach, I'd play Vladar in two of them and Wolf in one of them.
Yeah, same here.
Which one you want to put who in for. But, I mean, I probably wouldn't even take Markstrom on this road trip.
Me either, really. Yeah. It's one of those, like, I can understand, like, if they wanted to put Markstrom against Minnesota again for that you know, trying to get home ice if in the third round type scenario.
See, and again, if I want to do that, if I want to play him in one, I might take him to Nashville, send him home after that, and then keep the other two goalies for the back-to-back. I think, yeah, you never know. I think if you're going to rest him, you've got to rest him and not sort of bring him on the road to tag along. So I think you either bring him to the first one and send him home or keep him home for the whole trip. Yeah.
And with the amount that he's played, you know, like, an extra few days is not going to hurt him.
I think right now you're better. I mean, I'd hate to put him in there and he gets hurt, yeah, right? So I think you're better off to just shut him down and keep him at home and send Vladar and Wolf on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, like, the last thing you want to do is, oh, our Vezina caliber goaltender just got hurt. You know, in a meaningless game.
And I'm much less confident going to the playoffs with Vladar Wolf as our pairing.
Yeah.
Or Vladar Werner because they want to make a run of it in Stockton.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's just not good.
So, yeah, I think your best bet is leave Jacob at home this week.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how, like, each day on, like, how the minor alterations to the standings are. It finally looks like Vegas is dead in the water and not going to make the playoffs, which, yay for anybody who hates Vegas. Other than that, it's just kind of a wait and see, and basically looking at the out of town scoreboard and seeing like how the other two teams, Nashville and Dallas, are doing, and you know, counting down the minutes until we actually have an opponent finalized, and then we can start really going to town on looking ahead to game one.
So the Flames are going to be looking at two, and also a start date for that season.
Yeah.
Or that series, I should say, after the season.
I'm expecting it to be like a Monday or Tuesday game one for whichever opponent.
I guess we'll find out. But between now and next week, which is going to be the end of the season, we'd ask if everyone could leave us a review wherever it is you listen to the show. We'd really appreciate it. It helps expose us to new listeners, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to us, leave a review. Leave your comments. If there's a star rating or a thumbs up, do that as well. And that'll help us reach more Flames fans as we get to the playoffs. If you want to follow us or discuss some of these things with us on social media, we're on Twitter at Fireside Podcast. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/firesidechat. We're on Instagram, firesidechat_podcast. We also have a YouTube channel. The best way to get to that is go to our website, firesidechat.ca, and click the link in the header. And while you're at our website, you can also send us an email from there by going to the contact section. There's also a way to leave a voicemail through the website or comment on the show. So we'd love to hear from our fans. You heard that we had someone this week who left two comments or two questions for us. So whether questions, comments, whatever you want to leave, we would love to have you be part of the show with some of your feedback as well. So Matt, I think that wraps up this week, and enjoy the road trip.
Yeah, and as always, go Flames go, and congratulations to clinching the division.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.